And this is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. We are talking about PTSD and first responders. With us, Abe Abaraya, 90.7's health reporter, working on a year-long project with ProPublica, looking into PTSD and first responders. Jeff Orange with the Orlando Fire Department. He runs the peer support program there. Congresswoman Val Demings, representing Florida's 10th Congressional District, is with us as well. And Daniel Oates, Miami Beach Police Chief. We want to hear from you as well, 1-866-338-5252. You can send in your questions and comments on Twitter at WMFE Orlando. And I want to bring Deb Beidel into the program. She's the Professor of Psychology and Medical Education at the University of Central Florida and Director of UCF Restores. It's a program which helps people with PTSD. Deb, if you could just tell us a little more about how the program works and who you've helped so far.
Thank you for having me here today. The program works in several ways. We have both individual treatment and group treatment that is directed at post-traumatic stress disorder. We also have the only program of its kind in the country, which is a three-week intensive treatment program that combines individual treatment and group treatment for this particular disorder. I think it's important to say, though, that when people experience a trauma, not everyone develops post-traumatic stress disorder. So we're also able and offer services for people who, as a result of trauma, have anxiety, have depression, have sleep problems, whatever that might be. Mm-hmm. We've treated to date 126 first responders, and that's since Pulse, because that's when we opened our doors for treatment for first responders, about half of whom have post-traumatic stress disorder, not all from Pulse.
And was Pulse the event that prompted you to open the program up to those first responders?
It was a confluence of events. So we had been working on this intensive treatment program for military personnel and had been generously funded by the Department of Defense to do that. At the same time, we were working with Jeff and other groups on peer support training with first responders. So when the time came to actually, when Pulse came actually that day, we were asked what we could do, and we thought we could take this program that we knew had been highly successful and start to trim it and modify it and change it to address the needs of first responders.
Mm-hmm. How has your understanding of PTSD changed in the time this program's been running? Has this been a bit of a learning experience for you as well?
It's always a learning experience. And so it's changed in a number of ways. In talking and listening to first responders, we've heard the types of events that really do create this disorder. And I think it's important to say that, you know, this can be cumulative. It doesn't have to be one big gigantic event that happens, either an IED explosion or a mass shooting. Post-traumatic stress disorder can develop as a result of lots of events that accumulate. And then, you know, there's that one event that, as the saying goes, breaks the camel's back, that one straw, and leads to the development of a disorder. So I think that's something that we need to think about. And I think the other thing for first responders that we need to think about that's different is the whole idea of relapse prevention. Because unlike active duty personnel and, well, actually unlike veterans who are never going to go back into combat, first responders are going back to the job, and they're going back and they're going to see more traumatic events. So as part of any good treatment program, we have to think about how do we prevent this from happening again.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Orange, let me come back to you for a moment. What's been your experience of helping colleagues deal with PTSD or helping sort of steer them in the right direction to get the help that can get them back on their feet or back on the job?
I think the biggest thing for us, probably the biggest challenge that we face, and I think is still faced, is breaking down the stigma that's involved in any disorder, anything that you can't see. You walk into a room with a broken arm, and there's probably a pretty cool story behind it. You walk into the room, and you're not feeling quite yourself, and there's a tendency to be perceived a little bit differently. And I think breaking down that stigma and helping guys realize that they're not going to be looked down upon, that their crew is not going to lose faith in them if they step forward. That's the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing when people come to us, is saying, I don't want my crew to know because I don't want them to think that I can't do the job, because everybody wants to get back to the job. It's a job that we all love. Nobody wants to leave the job. We're just having a hard time right now, and we're trying to find the solution and the answer to that. Mm-hmm. So I think breaking down that stigma, getting this out in the open, doing things like what Abe is doing and what they're doing out at UCF is huge. Just offering a place for guys to go and realize that they're not alone in this whole thing.
Is there a bit of education that goes on with the colleagues of whoever it is who's experiencing some of these difficulties as well?
Yeah, I think education is one of the foundations that has to be in place. I think that if we start to learn what this is, it becomes less of the scary monster that everybody thinks that it is. It becomes less of a stigma. And if there's no education, then we're not going to move forward with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Daniel Oates, police chief with Miami Beach. Here's a question for you. How do you convince first responders that getting help won't mean an end to their career? Because that seems to be a theme that we are hearing.
Well, it's a challenge. I ended up, of course, in the aftermath of the Aurora shooting, doing any number of presentations around the country about the event and how it occurred and the impact on us. And one of the big discussions I remember being involved in a police chief's conference was whether or not I should have mandated that everyone in the department go through a counseling session afterwards. And there was a great debate about that. And I took the position, no, that I'm not going to force people to see someone afterwards. But what we did is we made the therapy and the counseling very, very available. And we had a good relationship between our department and our professional psychiatric team. Our folks were familiar with them beforehand. And what we did is we had them, for those who were reluctant, most of us did, and I modeled, just like John Mina, I modeled the behavior by doing it myself and seeing a counselor and making sure everyone knew that I had done that. But there were a handful of people who despite our entreaties and despite efforts and outreach by the psychiatrist, did not choose to, and it was a struggle to get them. And I know of one particular officer who really was involved, was in the mix of all the mayhem that night and transported people to the hospital and clearly was traumatized, and we never quite got through to him to realize the value of that kind of therapy. Now, I think years later he did eventually avail himself of it, but it's always a challenge for leadership in an organization, the extent to which you force something that someone is resistant to do. The best thing, I think, is to have his or her peers and leadership and the professionals do the outreach and keep offering to provide that assistance. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully the person will eventually see the value of it.
Is it something that, police departments just accept that they need to build some of this awareness and training for the kind of upper levels of the the senior officers as they move forward now?
Well, I don't want your listeners to think that, sharp, enlightened police departments, larger police departments in the United States, don't do all those smart things around training. I think the biggest challenge, and Jeff spoke to it, is a cultural resistance on the part of cops and firefighters to say, I need help, mm-hmm. because of how we define ourselves and perceive ourselves. And it's really breaking through that. I mean, good departments have systems in place. I do, again, getting back to peer support, is still a relatively new concept in some places in the country. I found that it was a brand new concept here in South Florida. So that is an innovation in recent years that I think is particularly helpful. But large departments already have systems in place and put cops through training so they know that these resources are available. There's a problem with our profession is I think a lot of us sort of culturally define ourselves as having to be strong, maintain a certain facade, and not asking for help. And that's where the breakthrough has to occur. That it's okay, it's normal, it's perfectly appropriate to reach out for help.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Chief, this is Abe with ProPublica. I wanted to follow up on something you mentioned, which is, the large department factor. What about smaller departments that maybe don't have the resources that, Miami Beach or Orlando have?
I think it's as varied as the country and individual regions are varied. I've never worked in a really small department. There, generally, the rule of thumb is the smaller the department, the less resources there are, period. So the less resources there are to keep patrol cars on the road, and the less resources there are for training, and the less resources there are for this kind of highly specialized service. I think that's generally the rule, and that's probably a particular area where there could be a weakness in service. Then, of course, the other thing, smaller departments are particularly challenged to deal with large crises. So, for instance, Mike Kehoe, my friend and colleague who was the chief in Newtown, very, very small department and how they handled and had to react to that tragedy in Newtown. You know, Mike and I have talked, very, very different than Aurora, which was a large department. And he was handicapped by having those limited resources, but he had as cataclysmic an event happen in his town as I had in mine.
Mm-hmm. On the resourcing issue, Congresswoman Val Demings, I wonder if I could bring you into this. You've got legislation behind you now, which will hopefully address some of that, but is there more work to be done and as far as getting some funding from the national level, maybe to smaller departments that are sort of maybe struggling to get the funding they need to get programs up and running and get these police officers or firefighters or first responders the help they need?
You know, there's definitely plenty of work to do. And when you think about resources and smaller departments, I think the potential for PTSD cases to just explode are greater in smaller departments, because in most cases, when they respond to a horrific scene, they may know every victim on that particular scene. And, you know, Chief Oakes was talking about the cultural resistance, and we all understand that. But I also believe that police academies and police executives set the standard for what the culture is, for what's acceptable and unacceptable within an organization. And we have to continue to work hard to make sure that our personnel understand that it's okay. In the police academy, for example, we spend a lot of time training them, talking about criminal law and in police academies, defensive tactics, operational responses and procedures. But maybe we should spend more time talking about PTSD and the resources available and making sure that our personnel understand that it's okay to seek the help that they need. For resources, I believe the federal government plays a major role in setting standards and making sure that resources are available for no matter what the size of the agency, because the job is still the same. Mm-hmm. And so I do believe that we're at a good start with the legislation that we have passed, but there's still a lot more work to do.
Jeff Orange with the Orlando Fire Department, if I could come back to you for a moment, what did you hear from that panel on Wednesday evening that illustrates some of the challenges first responders face when dealing with PTSD and getting help for it?
I think one of the big key takeaways that I heard on Wednesday and have kind of been echoed throughout the last couple of years are, again, the fear of what's going to happen if I step forward. But also on top of that was the how do I deal with this when I get home? How do I have a normal conversation with my wife after I've seen the most horrific thing? And what she wants to talk about is that she burnt breakfast or that, you know, day-to-day, everyday things. So I shut down. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to have that conversation with her or him. The person that means the most in my life to me, I'm not sure how to talk about one of the things that means the most in my life to me. That family dynamic is huge. When that starts to break down, that can lead to all sorts of other things. And I do want to speak on the education piece. Again, there's a lot of departments right now, fire departments, in the Central Florida region and throughout Florida that are starting to really collaborate and bring resources together. It's a very positive thing. We sent our team down to Parkland. We sent our team out to Vegas when that happened because, again, peer support and knowing that you're speaking to guys who've been through something similar is huge. Mm-hmm. We educate all our new hires on peer support and the resources available because there might be a time in your career that you hit a speed bump and you need to get past it.
Mm-hmm. Deb Bidle, are you seeing kind of similar collaborations? I mean, are you sort of reaching out to other police departments, fire departments, other first responder groups across Florida as well, or is it just kind of here in Central Florida?
No, we've been reaching out and we've been working with various places too. We've worked with people from Las Vegas. We've been down at Parkland. I think that this is an issue that more and more people are beginning to recognize. And I think it's important for people to understand that trauma changes you forever. When you have this kind of event, you're never going to be the same person. And that's what we try and speak to when we talk to all of these different groups, that they should never expect that they're going to go back to exactly the way they were before, but that hopefully they can move forward and they can still have a productive life and that they're still going to be able to do lots of things, go back to work, go back to their family. But to expect that everything is going to be gone and they're never going to think about this event again is really just wrong.
Mm-hmm. And Jeff, I mean, that can be a challenge for families too, as you mentioned. Just a few seconds left here, but I mean, is there similar things as the peer support group you have for the firefighters to help families kind of cope with some of these situations?
We're really trying to implement some of those things. We have somebody from Arizona named Jeff Dill coming in July, and we're doing a family session where he's going to speak to them, do a workshop with the spouses on some of the things that they might encounter. We've started talking again to our new hires, and not just our new hires, but the families as well, on certain things that they might encounter as well. How to handle it when your husband or your wife comes home a different person.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that? How do you open that conversation? And are you willing to maybe not have that conversation yet, but give space, and when to give space?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of dynamics that go into it, and there's a lot of work to be done, but also a lot of work that has already been done.
Mm-hmm. Abe, in the final few seconds remaining, what's next for your project?
So we've got another story coming out Monday, dealing with, very long, in-depth look at Pulse and first responders. Mm-hmm. And we've got some more radio pieces as well. And you can pretty much check everything out at ProPublica.org, WMFE.org. And we'll, continue working with the survey and try and find as many first responders as we can.
Abe Abariah from 90.7, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Also joined by Jeff Orange. He runs a peer support program with the Orlando Fire Department. Jeff, thank you.
Thank you.
And Deb Bartle, she's Professor of Psychology and Medical Education at UCF and Director of the UCF Restores Program. Deb, thank you as well.
Thank you.
And we're joined by Congresswoman Val Demings, representing Florida's 10th Congressional District. Thank you, Congresswoman.
Thank you.
And Chief Dan Oates from Miami Beach. Thank you so much, Chief Oates.
Thank you.
You can find out more about WMFE and ProPublica's First Responder Project at WMFE.org and ProPublica.org. Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. The executive producer is Catherine Welch. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.